Hey everyone, Stephen Clyde here. Well, there is a lot going on in the world right now. If y'all didn't hear, on April 7th, there was a supposed chemical attack in Syria. I think it was in Douma, Syria. Is that how it's pronounced, Kyle? Douma?
That's how I've been saying it. I hear different people say it different ways. Yeah. I'm sure the people who actually live there say it completely differently than both you and I say it and most other people in the U.S. So Douma works. Everybody knows what we're talking about.
There we go. So there was a chemical attack, a supposed chemical attack recently. And the story goes that Assad helicopters, they dropped these chemical weapons and 40 to 80 people suffered and suffocated. So I'm having Kyle Anzalone back on. He runs Foreign Policy Focus. You can check him out at foreignpolicyfocus.libsyn.com. Thanks for coming on, Kyle.
Thank you for having me. I mean, we're talking about really important stuff right now. And so, you know, people, podcast hosts like you who are taking the time to talk about these issues at this very critical moment, where at least as of the recording of this podcast, the bombs haven't started to fall yet. And so if anything could be done to sway Trump's opinion right now in Syria, it needs to be done.
Yeah, I just got to start by saying I am very tired. I did not get much sleep last night. I was refreshing the page, looking for the article saying, you know, like something really, really serious happened. And serious stuff is happening. And right as we speak, bombs could be dropping. But I guess what I wanted to do real quick is just kind of go over some history, because I had Will Porter on and we discussed Syria. And I just want to show like how much I learned from him in about a 30-minute period. So let me just give you the history. So Hafez Assad, he was the father of Bashar al-Assad, and he ran Syria from 1971 to 2000. And in 2000, Bashar al-Assad took over. Now, one important thing to remember is in 1982, there was the Hama massacre, and there was about, not kidding, 2,000 to 40,000 people died. I mean, such a big margin of error of Syrians were killed. So that was one thing that really led to the tensions later on. You have John Bolton, and he's saying Syria is part of the axis of evil. Now, fast forward to the Syrian civil war, which started in 2011. Now, March 15th, 2011, there was the anti-corruption protest against Assad, which essentially we call it the Syrian civil war, and it's still ongoing. There was a supposed story about Assad releasing jihadists from prison, and that started a whole big deal. Now, in July 2011, the Free Syrian Army came along, and maybe we'll talk about that later. You know, 2013, the U.S. funded they funded rebels in 2013. The Pentagon and the CIA. And there's a good article by Seymour Hersh, but it's called The Red Line and the Rat Line. That helps explain a lot of it. February 2014, ISIS forms. You know, they're an enemy of Al-Qaeda. And later on in September 2014, we bomb ISIS. Now, there was one site Will mentioned to me. It's called the Conflict Arm Research CAR. And it showed that most weapons we send over there end up in the hands of ISIS. I mean, just crazy. All right, so July 2015, we're fighting ISIS. August 2015, Turkey actually bombs the Kurds, and we'll get into that a little bit later. Then there's the whole Aleppo deal in 2016, and Aleppo is just a rebel hub. You have all types of different factions going on, and it's very confusing. So I hope I didn't leave too much out. I was trying to give a brief overview of what's going on, and you know what led up to today is, well, obviously in 2011, there was those chemical attacks. And now, in April 7th, a few days ago, there was supposedly some more chemical attacks. So let me know what I missed and go for it, Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is what we had going on, I think we talked about this maybe on your show, but if not, on Liberty Weekly with Pat McFarland and others showing the Libertarian Union, I discussed the East Ghouta situation in detail and kind of what's been going on since the start of the year. Is Assad, well, I mean, the neighborhood of East Ghouta, which is a kind of a big section of Damascus that's been rebel held from, I believe, like 2013 on. Lately, this has been completely under siege by Assad. They're surrounded on all sides. There's seven different rebel groups operating in that area, all with various levels and allegiances to different leaders of the Al-Qaeda movement, whether it be al-Nusra or Osama bin Laden. You know, these aren't ISIS fighters, so they're not necessarily loyal to Baghdadi. I think they have different golf backers. The particular rebel group living in Douma, which is important because this is a situation we're talking about now, was actually backed by Saudi Arabia. that group didn't get along with the other rebel groups and actually had fights against them. Even when Assad was bombing the rebel groups have been fighting between themselves. And so as you like start to see already, like the conflict and the situation in Syria is very complex. I mean, even if you look in this small area and this little snapshot of what's going on in Syria, there's seven different rebel groups operating in one small section of Damascus, and some of them fight against each other. And at various times, they form different alliances within themselves and fight against different factions. And so it really gets crazy and chaotic, and it's very hard to understand or to be able to pick a winner, despite the fact that everybody wants to try to. But over the past couple months, Assad waged and Russia waged an absolutely brutal bombing campaign on the area of East Ghouta, killing an estimated, I think, about 1,000 civilians in 10 days, so 100 civilians a day in airstrikes. And there was a lot of international outrage, but there definitely wasn't a demand, at least not this loud of a demand, that the United States carrying out airstrikes against Assad. Trump never addressed it on that level. And you know, just if you look at the pulse of the situation, look at the commentary coming out of Syria from the analysts and the experts, at that time, there wasn't a real concern that the United States was going to go ahead and attack Assad. However, as you said, on April 7th, when you had the last Syrian rebel group holding out in Douma, there's an alleged chemical weapons attack that kills 40. And so this seems to be needing to provoke a response. But the other rebel groups surrender. This particular group hasn't, in part because they don't get along with the other rebel groups. But they had actually started to surrender in, I believe, like on the 5th and 6th of April. And then that stalled out on the 7th. And Assad definitely carried out airstrikes on on Douma on the 7th, and possibly 40 people died. In fact, the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, and up until this particular chemical weapons attack, they have reported several chemical weapons attacks that are completely unconfirmed. And so this isn't a group known for holding back and having a high standard on the reporting for chemical weapons. But they reported that 80 civilians suffocated to death in a basement, but had no mention of chemical weapons. So, and this kind of thing happens in war zones. In fact, it happened, the United States did it in Mosul. They dropped 2 500-pound bombs on a building where ISIS was using snipers on the roof, and the building collapsed and killed 150 people or so in the basement. And it's very unfortunate. And, you know, I'm sure that, you know, Assad more or less doesn't care about the people in the basement, just like Donald Trump did in Mosul. But at the same time, it wasn't a chemical weapons attack, or at least that's what appears at this point.
Now, let's get into the specifics of the attack, because I'm going to link to Foreign Policy Focus episode 178. You had Will Porter on. You guys really go into depth in this stuff. And, you know, one thing you talk about is this supposedly was dropped on a hospital, but, you know, you kind of look at the building and it doesn't really look like a hospital. Maybe talk about that for a sec.
Right. Well, some of the reporting says the attack was on the hospital. Now, not all the reporting says that, and I guess that's, you know, worth being clear about. But it does show that the situation and the evidence is very muddled, that not even like that there's not even a consistent narrative coming out about how Assad carried out the chemical weapons attack. Other issues would be that some of the photographs appear that there's been bodies added or moved. And this would be, you know, be very strange that like the crime scene shouldn't have changed. We're talking about a chemical weapons attack here. So when the people who are taking the pictures arrived, everybody is already dead, you know, and had they, you know, nobody there. Yeah. So somebody moved the bodies around. There's also an issue with chlorine gas should actually bleach an area. And it turns out that if you look at some of the pictures, there's like some yellow stains on stuff. And so that doesn't necessarily line up. There's also conflicting reports whether it was sarin or chlorine gas. And then the odd thing is that some of the claims that it was sarin also say that people smelled chlorine. And sarin, one of the reasons sarin is so deadly is because it's colorless and odorless, and you can't see it or smell it. You just start dying.
Yeah, I mean, it's just insane what's happening right now. And just the Syrian civil war itself, upwards of like 500,000 people have died by some estimates.
Yeah, I think the best estimate is like 350,000. And that's not to say that the war hasn't been absolutely brutal, and I'm not trying to downplay what's happened here. But you know, the numbers that say 500,000 are typically from groups and organizations that are funded by either Gulf states, the United States, or the UK, like the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights or the White Helmets.
We're no doubt in the hundreds of thousands, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The other thing worth mentioning is that when everybody talks about the deaths in Syria, they say that Assad is responsible for 500,000 deaths. Well, if you look at the actual death tolls, half the deaths are on Assad's side of the war. And so you're kind of saying that he's responsible for the deaths of his own army. You also have to look at and realize that the other side of the Syrian civil war, the fighters are ISIS and Al-Qaeda, who are known to kill civilians. We know that ISIS kills civilians that are trying to flee. Is that somehow, you know, a death that could only be blamed on Assad? Wouldn't the United States, who maybe gave them the weapons, bear more responsibility in that case? And also the United States has killed people in Syria as well as the coalition, at least 1,500 people in Raqqa. And so to blame all these deaths on Assad is very misleading.
I'm going to go ahead and run the first clip we talked about. It's a clip of Donald Trump. He's condemning the attacks and talking about the recourse that's going to happen with Assad. So here's the clip.
I'd like to begin by condemning the heinous attack on innocent Syrians. Don't see things like that as bad as the news is around the world. You just don't see those images. Trying to get people in there, as you know, it's been surrounded, so it's very hard to get people in. And if they're innocent, why aren't they allowing people to go in and prove? Because as you know, they're claiming they didn't make the attack.
Yeah, so I mean, basically the first thing he says is that he condemns the attacks, and he says Assad says he didn't partake in the attacks. But one thing he says that's really odd, he says, we don't see things like that in the media. I mean, what do you think about that? I think that's crazy to say.
Well, It's crazy to say. And this is, I guess, one of the things worth talking about is, why are chemical weapons such a big deal as compared to other means of dying? As I talked about, there was the case of the building collapsing in Mosul, 150 dead. There was a bombing of a funeral in Yemen that killed over 200 by some accounts. There was a bombing of a funeral in Yemen that killed over 100. I think Saudi Arabia was responsible for both of those. The United States bombed a hospital in Kunduz and then strafed the doctors as they ran away in 2015. Over 20 were killed in that attack and no one was ever held responsible. And so, you know, why is one of these events particularly worse than the other? Now, one of the reasons why there's such condemnation of chemical weapons is because they're weapons of mass destruction, meaning that they could kill a lot of people. So if you go back to the 2013 chemical weapons attack in Ghouta, and this was actually a sarin gas attack, unlike what I think happened both in Douma and what happened in Khan Sheikhoun. But this attack killed 1,000 people. And, you know, like I said, if it's sarin, you can see it, you can't smell it, you just start suffocating. And it has to, you know, be an absolutely terrifying way to die. But it spreads out over a large area and it doesn't take very much to kill you. And it could just wipe out an entire, small area of a city worth of people and kill thousands, if not tens or hundreds of thousands, depending on what, you know, how populated the city was that was used. But here we're talking about only 40 people dying. And so this should also, raise some skepticism, which is, why did only 40 people, you know, die at the most in this attack? And also, doesn't that kind of negate the reason that chemical weapons are a big deal? If there's only a few people dying, I mean, what does it matter if Assad, you know, dropped a conventional weapon and the building collapsed and crushed all these people to death? Or if it was through a chemical weapon, because Assad certainly has done that time and time again. And the United States has done that time and time again in Syria and Iraq fighting ISIS. And there's been no international, you know, demand by everybody in the United States of America, every political wing. The anti-war folks and the libertarians are pretty good. But other than that, everybody's out there demanding, the consensus is that Assad must be attacked.
Yeah, and near the end of that clip, he says, why aren't they allowing people to go in and prove? If Assad's saying he didn't do it, why doesn't he let people go in? What is he even talking about?
All right, yeah. So there's one thing he says right before this, which is that Assad has the area surrounded. And it really makes it sound like what happened here is that the Syrian military moved in, surrounded, and is locking down the site and preventing anybody to get in. And that's not what happened. Duma is surrounded by the Syrian army, but it has been. It's under siege. It's been this way for, I think, over a year now, that this particular the Eastern Ghouta area of Syria was isolated, but it's been weeks since the particular Duma area was cut off from everything else. And so these are the positions that the Syrian army has held for some time. Going on to the next point you made there, that, you know, it's that Assad's are they're just not letting like humanitarian aid or inspectors in. Well, the reason for this is, one, it could be used to resupply the rebels. Something that they point out is that, you know, if we send aid in, it goes to the rebel fighters first. It's not like Al-Qaeda are these virtuous people that are going to feed the dying women and children first. The people of the Sunni resistance to Assad are not better people than Assad. And you know, just because Assad's a tyrant doesn't mean, you know, that the other side's worse. Like, you know, everybody always thinks of it as like Lord of the Rings, like the elves fighting against the orcs. Well, sometimes the orcs fight against the orcs. And then, like, why are you trying to pick a side in that fight, right?
One thing we should have mentioned early on is that Bashar al-Assad, he's Shia, and I think Syria is like 75% Sunni. So are the rebel groups, are they actually Sunni rebel groups?
Yeah, these are mostly Sunni rebel groups. I don't know if there's any non-Sunni fighters fighting against Assad. There may be a couple. I mean, I can't definitively say that. There's a lot of foreign fighters who have come in and fought for the Syrian resistance to Assad. And Assad is an Alawite, which I think is different than Shia, but I'm just going to be honest and say I'm not a scholar on Islam or anything, and I don't understand where Alawite fits into the whole spectrum there.
Yeah, we got to ask Will that. I had that written down, Alawites, because I think, yeah, you're right, Bashar al-Assad's Alawite. I don't know much about it. I know Will's the expert on that one. But so April 8th, Trump goes on.
Wait, can I add just one quick thing?
Go ahead.
All right, so one of the reasons that Assad in Russia may not be willing to let just any old inspectors walk into Duma and make an assessment if chemical weapons are used is the fact that there's been several times that the inspection reports have not been honest. If you look at the report on Khan Sheikhoun, they, you know, more or less assess that Assad was guilty of the attack. But at the same time, in the footnotes of that report, they point out that there's tons of inconsistencies, like several victims of the attack showing up to the hospital before the actual time of the attack. And so, you know, that's a real problem, right? Like this is something that, you know, should be noted and highlighted first, that if the victims of the alleged attack show up before the attack occurred, it means they couldn't have been in the attack. I don't know how much more clear that could be. Yeah.
Pretty obvious. So April 8th, Donald Trump goes on Twitter and says Assad's an animal. Now, tell us about what happened on April 9th, because you talk about this in Foreign Policy Focus episode 178 about the Israel airstrike, and you guys go into depth about that a little bit.
Yeah, just to clarify, I think 178 was the show I did myself on Monday, and I did cover like the introduction to like the chemical weapons attack. 179 is the one that released Wednesday. Yeah, and that's with Will Porter. Both are on the same subject, though. So,
all right, there you go. I'll link to them both.
Anyways, Israel carried out an attack in Syria in the morning of April 9th, launched 8 missiles, I believe from planes, at the T4 air base in Syria. 5 of those 8 missiles, at least Assad or Russia claims to have intercepted. Now, it seems to me that most people, this is just something good to know if you're reading foreign policy news. A lot of times they lie and say they intercepted a missile when maybe they didn't. I'm sure, you know, this is something that happened during the first Gulf War. This is something that happens all the time with Saudi Arabia and Yemen. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they said, oh, yeah, you know, we shot down 5 of these 8 missiles, but maybe they only shot down 1 or something like that. Anyways, at least 3 of the missiles strike the target and killed, I believe, 12 people total, including 4 Iranians. One of those was a colonel involved in the drone program. I don't know if he was maybe the target of the attack. That's certainly a possibility as to why the attack was carried out. But it does, you know, Israel's not going to release a statement saying that, you know, on this day we did this and we're targeting this, and so this is why it happened.
You know, one thing he pointed out is that it's kind of odd they did it when like all eyes are on them.
Right. So the Israel policy for bombing Syria, Israel has carried out hundreds of airstrikes in Syria. And most people have no idea that this was occurring, but it's been occurring for years. In fact, the first one that really drew media attention was just maybe a little bit over a month ago. There was an Iranian drone that crossed into Israeli airspace. It was shot down, and then Israel launched a pretty massive attack on Assad's anti-aircraft. And then anti-aircraft weapons, and then an Israeli F-15 was shot down in response. So, you know, this was a pretty big news story, and one of the first times that Israel airstrikes in Syria were really publicized. And then, in fact, in response to this, Putin really told Israel to knock it off and stop bombing in Syria.
Right, right.
And so this attack, of course, comes right after the chemical weapons attack, when everybody is, you know, literally turning their phones in the sky of Lebanon, waiting for United States bombs or planes to streak over the sky and hit Assad's Air Force. Immediately, everybody just assumed, you know, I was kind of like following the story and situation on Twitter. And in fact, when I first read, I just assumed that was probably the Americans. I mean, who else would do it at this time? And Israel has been so covert about their strikes. And so this was obviously going to be obvious and publicized. And in fact, in response to this, Iran or Russia kind of greenlighted Iran that if Israel carries out further strikes against you in Syria, you have permission to bomb the source of the, you know, Israeli strike. So if they, you know, launch from an airfield, or you hit that airfield, I guess.
I'm going to go ahead and run the second clip now, and this clip is featuring Gary Robertson and Peter Ford. Now, Peter Ford's a former ambassador to Syria. Take a look.
The point is that surely that Assad's reputation is already dented. What would be in the interests of these people to stage these events?
Is that not obvious? A child can see that the intention was to produce the hysteria and now the military action that we are on the point of taking, risking our own safety. What the jihadis have done is jerk our leash. And frankly, for one, I think it's pretty disgusting that we are allowing ourselves to have our own leash jerked by these Islamist fanatics.
So yeah, I mean, pretty much what he's saying is the jihadis jerked our leash. You know, that's quote exactly what he said. He says, you know, even a child can understand what's going on. So, I mean, really, really good clip. But yeah, what do you think about that?
Right. In the lead up to this interview, the guy is like trying to get it out of the former ambassador Ford that, you know, Assad's a bad person. And he, you know, is finally like, look, even a child could see why the Syrian rebels would carry out this attack. Now, they're jihadists. Their bats were up against the wall. They needed a Hail Mary. They were praying to the Americans, please, please save us from Assad. And this is, you know, what they're at least, I guess, trying to get. And the only way that they could be saved from Assad is by the Americans coming in and bombing Assad. You know, of course, us in the West are worried that this is going to spark World War III. But if you're, you know, just focused on seizing area of Syria, well, that's really not a concern to you. I mean, I'm sure that Damascus, Syria probably wouldn't be on the top of anybody's list to use a nuclear weapon on. And so, you know, the jihadists there are probably relatively unconcerned about the bigger geopolitical issues, but certainly concerned about their immediate needs to get somebody to come save them from Assad.
Now, do you have any additional information? Because you follow foreign policy way more closely than I do. I try to keep up, but you know, you're really the expert on this. What's been going on recently that's really been channeling into what we're seeing happening in just the past 24 hours?
Well, I mean, we keep getting everybody like kind of holding their breath and just wondering when the strike is going to happen. I mean, certainly the way everybody is phrasing it in the media is that there's going to be an airstrike, and that's a foregone conclusion. Now, there are campaigns out there to go and light up both the White House and the congressional switchboards. If, you know, you're in a Republican state, call your congressman and say, hey, Donald Trump's about to violate the Constitution and we need a vote on this. And at the very least, I mean, that's really going to put the brakes on this thing, is Congress has to have a vote. Congress does things pretty slowly, and there's going to be a lot of opposition to this. And this is actually what shut down the United States game back in the war in 2013. If you remember, Obama was going to carry out airstrikes against Assad after the chemical weapons attack in Ghouta, which was a false flag carried out by the rebels, as now known. And Obama was about to buy the, you know, and let them, you know, jerk the leash or whatever back in 2013. And then he said, well, you know, Congress, you know, I could do this, but Congress should vote on it. And when Congress was going to vote on it, everybody called, and, you know, the military members were, you know, at that time posting the picture saying, like, you know, I didn't sign up to, you know, fight for Al-Qaeda and stuff like that. And there was a real campaign, and that war was stopped. And so, like I said, if you're a Republican, do that. If you're a left winger, say, what are you doing? You're letting Trump have, you know, unbelievable war powers, you idiot. Call and make him stop this. If you're calling the White House, say, you said you were going to put America first back in 2013. And in response to that previous false flag chemical weapons attack that I was just talking about in Gauta, and I'll send you a link if you don't have one, of a screenshot of Trump's tweets back then. But he was telling Obama, you don't have the authority to go and bomb Syria. You shouldn't go and bomb Syria. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of American lives. The Syrian war is too much of a mess to get involved in. I mean, he was making all those arguments back then that I am making today. And, you know, this is, it's the same as that situation. I mean, I guess at least in Obama's case, 1,000 people or more died. In this case, it was 40. So,
yeah. And I mean, another thing I was reading this morning is that Russia is possibly jamming drones. Now, me and you discussed this before we went on. I mean, we know about as much as what the article knows, but how do you think this is happening? And if it's happening, is it happening from Russia, or is it like Russian military personnel inside Syria somehow? Like, how does that work?
So the only thing I've been able to read is that they suspect it has something to do with satellites. To be quite honest, I'm not sure how drones send and receive their signals. Yeah, I'm honestly kind of nervous to put that in the Google search bar. So this is just going to remain a little bit of a mystery to me.
There you go.
But my guess would be, it seems to be that they could probably disrupt smaller areas that they haven't really like shut down the United States from being able to carry out drone operations completely in Syria. I would guess is, you know, much more complex than that. It may be that they actually have to like target the drone. So, you know, they see the drone flying along, they like kind of calculate up the satellites or whatever. So I'm just trying to say, like, I think it's very easy to imagine this, that there's like now a force field over Syria, and the U.S., you know, satellites or stations or antennas or whatever can't communicate with the drones that cross into that area. That doesn't seem like it's the case for me. Also, it's worth noting that this technology was used, but I think in a less effective form in 2014 during the coup in Ukraine, when the United States was getting involved over there, and there was a real threat of war and conflict between the United States and Ukraine then.
I read something else yesterday that was showing that all the air traffic over Syria is no more. I mean, like, no one's flying over Syria right now to prepare for the attack. Did you see that?
I did. You know, my guess would be is that, you know, that all the individual airlines would make this decision to just based on looking at the situation.
We're going to fly
sure
out,
that yeah. They. Yeah, I'm sure that they do have people that do something like what I do, which is sit around and read foreign policy news to give them advice on what's going on and where may or may not be dangerous, especially in the wake of the civilian plane that got shot down over Ukraine. It you know, this was one of those cases where it seems to be that, you know, they knew they were flying over a dangerous area where there was a possibility of warplanes clashing and stuff like that. And so I'm sure that, you know, airlines are probably a little bit more reserved after that event. And so, you know, it could just be that. But also, I would say for me, one of the things that kind of sent up some warning signals was, I believe on the 10th, the European FAA equivalent issued a statement saying that the passenger planes should avoid that general area of Western Syria for the next 72 hours. And so, you know, that's kind of scary. But at the same time, it's worth noting that the United States gave Saudi Arabia permission to give man pads, which are portable surface-to-air missiles, to jihadists in Syria. And while, you know, most passenger planes should probably fly too high to be hit by those, you know, the warning could come just from that as well. It doesn't necessarily, you know, I mean, I want to just draw the straight conclusion. I guess there's other factors.
No, absolutely. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, Kyle. You came on short notice. I was just like, you know, by the way, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the episode, I'm going to continue my discussion of Anatomy of the State by Rothbard throughout the rest of the week, but I needed to do this episode today. I apologize for how stumbly I am throughout this episode. I got like 2 hours of sleep last night. Again, everyone's really, really on edge right now. And like, by the time we're done recording this, we're going to go check and see what's going on. So is there anything else you can think of to add, Kyle? Because I'm going to link to Foreign Policy Focus 178, 179. I'm going to link to those pictures of the Trump tweets. I'm going to link to the full videos of those clips. Is there anything else?
Man, I mean, just keep an eye on it. You know, anything could really happen here, I guess. I mean, Trump could decide to do nothing. I don't want to make it out to be that definitely something's bad is going to happen. But it does seem to me that, you know, everybody's kind of accepting it's a foregone conclusion that the U.S. is going to do something. It's just what the United States is going to do. Of course, the real fear here is that the United States forms like a giant coalition of European countries, goes in, carries out a big airstrike, and starts a massive war with Russia, which is entirely possible to happen. It's also possible that the United States launches 15 cruise missiles at the T4 airbase or some other Assad airbase in Syria. You know, five of them hit the target. Probably more civilians die than military personnel. It does very little damage to the Syrian government. Putin understands what's going on here. One thing that I think has been, you know, kind of a little bit of a good thing in the Syrian civil war is that Putin seems to be somebody that understands that the other side has internal politics in their country and that Donald Trump may need to save face sometimes. And so, you know, if the United States carries out a limited attack in Syria of some kind, maybe they strike two military bases this time so they could say it was more than what they did last time or an equivalent like that. Something good could happen and, you know, we could get by, you know, no more conflict with Russia and the U.S. at least for now.
But obviously, I mean, I hope he just backs down or not backs down, but just, you know, de-escalates the situation. I really don't think we can't afford another war. We just cannot afford another war. No war in Syria. I want to change my profile picture to that later, but that's going to be the title of this episode. It's No War for Syria, because we cannot afford this. Yeah, so thank you so much for coming on, Kyle. You're obviously a really great person to talk to on these issues, and it's always a pleasure.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. And one last thing. I think I overestimated the deaths in the Ghouta chemical weapons attack there. It may have been only in the mid-hundreds and not quite 1,000, but all the same, the comparison remains is that, you know, that was a far more significant attack than what happened in Douma, and just showing the responses kind of indicates, you know, how disingenuous the people who are trying to invoke the dead babies here are about their motives for wanting to carry out an attack against Assad.
You hear that, Madeleine Albright?
Right. 500,000 dead children. But these 10 means we have to start a whole another war in Syria.
Oh, my God. And she's coming out with a book titled Fascism. I don't know if it's already out or if it's about to come out, but the irony.
It's her autobiography, right?
It's her autobiography. All right, Kyle. Thanks so much. You know, Hey everyone, please like, follow, donate, subscribe, and share. Any donations will be used to reach more people.